Hey, one more thing before you go. What do you do when you're faced with emotional abuse as a child? How do you find self-worth as you grow older? Is there time to reconnect and fix those things in a torn relationship? We're going to answer these questions and more when we have a conversation with a woman that survived and thrived after finding out that she was unwanted at birth and had to learn how to turn hate into love. I'm your host, Michael Hurst, and this is The Thing About Second Chances. My guest today is Lori Herbers. She's an author, a life empowerment coach, and a survivor. As a child, she was emotionally abused and spent a lifetime searching for someone to love her, going from rock bottom to liberation, and helping others to look deep down inside themselves to find their purpose and move forward in life. So welcome to the show, Lori.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've had quite a bit. You've had quite a journey, actually.
Yeah. The beginning years were a little rough.
Well, you okay with talking about that?
Oh, yeah. Not a problem.
Well, as every story begins, let's start at the beginning.
Well, for me, before I was even born, my dad didn't want me. As soon as he found out my mom was pregnant, he was like mad and didn't talk to her 6 months. It was her fault. Magically, it was her fault. But yeah, so, and I can remember, I don't know how old it was. I was pretty small, sneaking down the steps. And I remember, I don't know why I was home. I don't know if I was home from school or maybe it was summer, everyone else was playing, but I came down the steps and I heard my mom talking on the phone to somebody about how, when I was pregnant, he didn't talk to me. Like, I heard it. And so being so little, like, I was like, what? So, even though even hearing that though, like, I knew, cause he was different with me. He was mean. He was hateful. I got blamed for everything. Like, the paper boy could knock the door shut and the wind would catch the door and blow the paper out. I would get yelled at. It was my fault, everything. And always being told I was stupid and worthless. And so then, of course, I wanted to be perfect. I tried so hard because I thought if I could just be perfect, then maybe he'll love me. Maybe then he'll say, oh, she's not so bad. And then that didn't work. And so then I'm like, well, maybe if I could just be so quiet and not seen. If he didn't see me there, then he wouldn't yell at me. So it kind of went from trying to be perfect to just hiding. And then after a while, I just was told I was stupid so much, I just kind of gave up. Because I got straight A's and I still wasn't good enough. And so I'm like, what's the point? I just stopped trying.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. Some of our listeners may not understand this, but in domestic violence, people typically relate domestic violence to parents or to mother, father, boyfriend, girlfriend type thing. But domestic violence also incorporates themselves within the family. And part of domestic violence is emotional abuse. And even from an early age, unfortunately, and that's kind of an unfortunate environment for someone to grow up in. Mm-hmm. So at what point did you, I know that you had said you had come down there as a little girl and it kind of stuck with you and so forth. So at what point in your life did you kind of, let's talk about like were your parents married?
Yes, they were.
Were they married because of the pregnancy?
No, I was the fourth one.
The fourth one.
Yeah, I don't know if you would say the third or the third. Oops. I don't know. My mom got pregnant at 18. And so they got married with my oldest sister. So that was the first oops. And then they had another daughter, but my dad really wanted a boy. My mom wanted lots of kids. He only really wanted two, but because he had two girls, he decided they could try one more time and they got a boy. They were supposed to be done. So, yeah.
I see. Did in the process of all of that, did your brothers and your sisters help you in any way?
See, that's the tricky thing. So to me, it's like was my world. And then there's a big gap. Like my oldest sister, like we've talked about it now because she's read my book and she's like, did he really talk to you like that? I guess he must have been very sneaky about how he did it because she never heard it. But then again, she was out of the house before I ever got out of middle school. Yeah, having that conversation, but I guess she was very, and it's really fun because I've learned a lot about her too. So like she was always in trouble because she fought back with him all of the time. So she didn't understand like, what's the big deal? But yeah, so I guess he was sneaky about it. I've never really asked my brother. We're only 14 months apart, and whether he heard it or not, but he was so athletic. He was always out of the house playing and stuff. So it was like my mom knew. She just said he just didn't know how to love me the right way. It was kind of just a me hiding in my room kind of thing.
You know, I'm sure that you're, as you had mentioned in some of your information that you had sent to me, your self-worth and your self-esteem gets totally shot in it, and it develops from an early age, unfortunately. And I'm sure that was hard to, that probably stuck with you through middle school and high school.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, by the time my senior year, like I said, like I tried really hard. I got straight A's, and then I don't know, fifth, sixth grade, finally was like, why am I bothering? So I just stopped trying. So by the time I got my senior year, the counselor's like, you're not smart enough to go to college. And because I already assumed I was stupid, it didn't even faze me. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm not smart enough to go to college. I'm not surprised. So, yeah.
You know, it's really sad that society and we as a society and we as a culture actively, I won't say promote that, but allow that to happen to anybody. You know, I'm a father. I would never treat my children that way. It's a situation that I'm also a retired police sergeant. So I was a part of a domestic violence task force that investigated with a multi-agency domestic violence task force. That's all we investigated on a consistent basis. And that's why I understand it from a perspective that it's not just the mom and dad fighting. It's not just the boyfriend, girlfriend fighting. It's a family environment that usually takes place within this environment. And it takes a lot for somebody to come out of that and to pull through that. So well done for where you're at now. I mean, we'll talk about that in just a little bit, but well done, because obviously you had said you spent a life, I think, pretty much hating everything about yourself, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Being told that you're never going to amount to anything and you can't do anything right. So I assumed mistakes. I was just this big walking mistake. Everything I did was a mistake. It got to the point where, like I said, I just stopped trying, because I'm like, what was the point? Because it didn't matter what I did, I was going to fail. It didn't matter what I said, I was unworthy. I was stupid. I mean, I wouldn't even raise my hand in school. It got to the point where I just tried to not be seen. And so when teachers would call on me, I would just give a wrong answer, because I'm like, what difference does it make? Because I'm, you know, I'm dumb. So I just stopped trying. You get to this point where it's just a very heavy weight to try to carry, that unworthiness. It's heavy. And then it just turned into anger, because all I wanted was just someone to tell me that I mattered. And I don't know. And then, you know, just to have a counselor then to tell you you're not smart enough to go to college. And then, of course, you know, as life went on, and boys, then again, if I don't think I'm worthy, then therefore I bring forth more people that don't think I'm worthy. So then, of course, that just kind of perpetuates that cycle. And then I, you know, dated guys that treated me like garbage because I thought I was, and that became acceptable, which is really sad when you think about it.
When did you first realize that you didn't want to be you wanted to move forward past that? When did you first realize that you are worth something, that you are important?
Geez. Yeah. It was way in there. I had already had a daughter by then. part of my thinking back then too was I didn't want to have kids because I didn't want to be like him. I was so afraid that I would treat someone as badly as he taught me or he treated me. So, but you know, messing around when I was young, cause I didn't think I was worthy. So shocker of all shocks, I ended up pregnant and alone. So, so here I was with my daughter, and she probably would have been, 8, 9 when my dad passed away suddenly. That was kind of like this eye-opening experience in a weird way, because most people are like, well, you didn't have a good relationship, so why would it have mattered? It mattered because I would never hear him say he loved me. That was all I ever wanted, was to hear that. And then he passed away suddenly, and what I wanted I could never have. Like, it was this huge, it's hard to say, like, I even went deeper in a hole than I had already been, because it's so hard to explain. Like, I couldn't get what I wanted ever, because he's dead now. They'll never say
you need a closure, I think.
Yeah.
you know, some kind of closure. I mean, people don't understand that there's always, in any journey that anybody takes, you always have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and people want closure at the end, whether it be positive. You know, they want a positive closing, whether or not it be. And I'm not a psychologist by any means, or you know, psychiatrist or clinician or therapist or anything like that, but just familiar with that situation and growing up in an environment similar to yours, you want closure.
Yeah.
It helps you to get closure. And that helps you to be able to understand things and move forward in life. So did you go to college?
Yeah, I actually have a master's.
Take that.
I know. I got, and what really kills me is I got a 4.0 and a master's in education.
I would love to go back to the counselor and show it to the nanny.
Right, I know. But that just shows, like, if you don't give up and don't, I guess my biggest motto now is don't let someone else's words become your truth. Other people don't decide who you are. And for so long, I let him dictate who I was, even though it wasn't true. I lived in a lie.
Well, yeah, and I think realization is one thing too, but, you know, because usually we have somebody within our family environment that gives us that affirmation and tells us that we're worth it and gives us the love that we are seeking. And everybody needs love. Everybody needs a hug. Everybody needs somebody to care for them. So when you don't have that in your life, it's hard to really see that coming from anywhere at some point in your life, mm-hmm. because it's difficult to fathom, I think. And obviously I'm going to get really personal here, but just because I know people in your position that have gone through the similar journey, had you ever tried to take your life? Had you ever tried to get to a point where you were at that rock bottom?
No. And I used to joke about it, even though I wasn't laughing. Like, I used to tell people, like, I can't, like, I don't like to take pills. Cause, like, so I couldn't kill myself taking pills, and I don't like the sight of blood, so I can't cut myself. Like, I used to joke about it, like, haha, this is funny. But deep down, if I, you know, when you think about it, if I really was good at swallowing pills, what would I have done? If I really liked the sight of blood, you know, what would I have done? If it wasn't for those, like, aversions to those specific things, what would I have done? And I remember when he passed away, so much anger. Like, I think in that moment, if I could have done those things, I probably would have, because I was at rock bottom. Like, I was at this point where, to me, nothing meant anything anymore. I was never going to hear him say he loved me. He wasn't supposed to be gone yet. I remember that day so clearly because I was so angry and so hurt and so broken that it was storming outside. And I remember yelling at God. Like, I grew up Catholic. So to me, like, I was just yelling. I went out into a storm. It was a full-fledged thunder, lightning, like yelling in the sky, tears streaming down, sounding like, why do you hate me so much, God? I just believed he hated me so much.
Yeah, that's quite a bit of anger, actually. Oh, had you started to reconnect with your dad prior to that in any form?
A little, yeah. He actually, I remember, I think it was this summer, because he died on a January. And that summer before, because they live, like, at the time, 10 hours away. And so my daughter and I were at home, and we always kind of would hang out at my mom and dad's house, and then we'd go to my sister's house. And he actually drove all the way up to my sister's because he didn't think we were going to come back through to see him. He thought we were already gone. So he actually literally drove up to my sister's just to say, hey. I was like, why are you here? And it was so weird because it just happened to be this summer before. And thankfully, I also talked to him on Martin Luther King Day in January. I just happened to call my mom and he answered the phone, and he actually stayed on the phone and actually talked for a little while before giving it to my mom. And then he passed away the 31st of January. So if I wouldn't have had that conversation, I can't even imagine. I really see that conversation as a blessing, and that summer before, cause I can't, it would have been even worse. But you know, we were just starting to talk. Cause usually if I would call home, it'd basically be like, is mom there? And he would just hand it to her. It was like, hello, hand it to my mom. That'd be the extent. Mm-hmm. But he was starting to be like, how's it going? How's Alyssa? That's my daughter. And at that time, I was actually going to school to be a teacher. And so he'd ask me, how was school and how was work? And yeah, we were. And that's, I think, part of the reason it also hurt too.
Do you think he had an epiphany? Do you think he maybe started to look back on his life and say, hey, maybe I did kind of do something wrong?
I think deep down, now that I've had a lot of time to think about it, I think he knew. But I think you get to this point where it's like, if I'm honest about it, you know, because the more I've learned about it, and he was so secretive about it, like if he was to actually open that piece of himself up, then other people would know. Because he was always like, you can't tell anyone. You can't go, you know, what happens at home, you can't tell people. And so I think that I think that's what makes it harder for people. Because once they admit it to one person, then there's more people that hear it. And then I think he always kind of knew, but didn't know how to fix it, maybe.
Well, and that might be part of the reasons why some of your family members, they have a tendency to, at least in my experience, they have a tendency to close their eyes and their ears to what's going on around in the environment, because it's easier to shut your eyes and close your ears than it is to actually acknowledge something that's going on. Would you agree with that?
Oh yeah. Our family has always been very hush, hush, quiet. You know, what happens in the house stays in the house kind of thing, which makes sense now. When I was little, I just thought that was normal, but that's not actually, unless there's abuse.
we all have skeletons in our closet. Every family has skeletons in our closet. But it's whether or not those doors get opened at all, you know, which kind of makes a difference within a family environment. So
yeah,
this is really interesting. So you got your master's. Had you had your daughter prior to going to college?
Nope. No, she, how old was she? She was maybe kindergarten. She was old enough to know that I was doing homework, because she'd be like, ugh, you're always doing homework. Instead of playing with me, kind of a thing. But it just got to the point that I just felt like I was wasting my brain. I was doing sheet metal assembly. I was actually building airplanes. And wow. I was so bored. Like a lot of people are like, some assembly things are so easy, but this wasn't. Like, you literally had to cut and measure and drill. But I was bored. I was so bored. I could literally do it in my sleep. And I think if it wasn't for the fact that I decided I wanted to be a supervisor, and you had to have a bachelor's degree at this place to be a supervisor. So I'm like, well, I think I'll try some classes. I just started with one, because I was like, I don't think I'm smart enough, and took one class and got an A. And I was like, I don't know. And then I took another one and got an A. And then I was like, okay, maybe I'll try this. And that's kind of how that started. But
yeah. Well, it's a positive thing. You learn to understand that you could tell yourself that you're worthy.
Yeah.
That's a lesson to everybody else. You could tell yourself that you're worried. That's a starting point.
Yeah. I still wasn't quite there, even at that point.
The first step to failure is the one you never take.
Oh, yeah. That I've learned. But I actually had this epiphany just last night. I was laying out on my patio, because I love watching the stars. And I was thinking about all of the times that had been horrible, and I was worried and stressed. It always turned out okay. So I'm like, sitting out there going, you know what, if I'm going to sit there and freak out and look back later and go, why did I freak out? Because every single time, you know, even if it was something really horrible, it still somehow worked out. So I'm thinking now, whenever something goes bad, I just go, okay, it's going to work out. So I'm just going to step back from it and know it's going to be okay, instead of freaking out. So I'd rather look back and be like, I was calm and collected, than look back and I freaked out for no reason.
You know, it's life. Life evolves. Yeah. And at some point in our life, we go, yeah, I did that right, or I did that wrong, or I could have done this differently. You know, we all look back on that. I wish I would have done this. I wish I'd have done it differently that way. You know, I wish when I was on the job, I didn't step in front of the car that hit me.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, I think I would have done that differently.
Yeah. And I'm not saying we don't have those moments, but all those times where I sat and worried and stressed so much, never really added, it didn't turn into anything. If I could have spent that in calm instead of chaos.
So when you went back to get your bachelor's degree, what was your interest in that? I understand your motivation in it, but what did you go back to school for?
Well, business. My associate's is actually in business. I kind of started with an associate degree thinking I was planning on bachelor's in business, but before I actually finished my associate, it turns out I'm really allergic to fiberglass when it's ground. And they had moved a downdraft machine right behind my table, and every night it's supposed to purge, but they didn't have it hooked up right, so it purged all over my stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I ended up being really allergic, and I had a horrible supervisor who didn't care. And basically it was one of those moments where he just snuck up to me and whispered so no one else would hear him. He's like, I'm going to step on whoever I have to step on to get where I want to go. And I don't care about you because I just asked to be moved. Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, this isn't not what I want. And so I left that job and just was volunteering at my daughter's school. Cause by then she was a second grader. And I was just kind of hanging out in school, and my friend's mom happened to be the principal and was like, hey, she's looking for a job. They literally came down and pulled me out of the classroom to the office and was like, hey, we're looking for a paraeducator. Are you interested? And I'm like, okay, I need a job. So why not? And then I loved it. Yeah.
That's a positive way to get pulled out of the principal's office.
I know, right? No? Yeah.
Could have been really...
Well, at first I was like, what is going on?
Yeah, why am I going to the principal's office?
I'm the mom, not the kid. No, but yeah. And then I switched to education because I loved working with kids, especially when I had a lot of kids that were had trauma. And it was so weird because somehow it's like they knew. There was just something about me that all those kids just were attracted to me. And so all these teachers that are like, oh, that kid over there, bleh. I'm like, that is, first of all, that made me mad. I'm like, don't ever discount a child. Mm-mm. And they just loved me. They would run down. I actually bruised one of my toes because one of the kids came to hug me so much, they stomped right on my toe. It was so bruised. But yeah, I think those kids, it's like they knew. There's just something about me that they're like, kindred she gets spirit. Me. Yeah.
Kindred spirit. Yeah. That's pretty cool. That should make you feel really good about yourself.
Yeah. I think that's kind of what started me on the whole empowering others. Like I always have. I was always, even when I was so in pain, people came to me. I was always I used to write poetry for my friends and just whatever. And they were, I can remember them calling me at 2 a.m. because something bad happened. I was always that person that they called. And it was so funny because there were so many times that words would come out of my mouth that I'd say to them and I'd be like, that was really good. I needed that. So yeah, I was already on a path that I didn't even know I was on, which is funny when I look back.
Hey, this works because you're changing other people's lives too.
Yeah.
And it's always nice to be there for somebody when somebody needs somebody.
Yeah. I've had some friends call me their guardian angel because I was always the one they called. So that was kind of nice.
That would make me feel good too. I mean, that's a positive thing. So have you ever found love?
Oh yeah. I'm in it right now.
Right now.
And it's just a crazy thing. Cause like when I really started digging into my thinking and I had so many beliefs because we don't understand what we are doing. Sometimes when people are saying stuff, sometimes somebody could just be in passing, say something and it gets shoved way down our subconscious and it wreaks havoc and we have no idea why. And then as I started digging through my thoughts and actually paying attention to what I'm thinking and going, what is that? And the more I did that, the more it just, I don't know. It's like the weight just started lifting. Like it started to unravel. It was like this big, I almost look at it like if you ever ripped open a golf ball, all those rubber bands, it's almost like the rubber band started unwinding. And like, I realized like my whole belief system that I was standing on was completely incorrect. And so I had to start over. I started fixing it and rebuilding it myself. And because really my whole life, all I wanted was love. I thought it came from someone else. Somebody had to give it to me. And I had it the whole time. And it wasn't until like, and I think that's why I love sitting outside on my patio at night is because all life is love. Like there's an energy, like we all have an energy and a frequency. And if people, you know, that are listening are like, what are you talking about? Google it. It's actually science. Like your heart has a different frequency than your brain. We actually emit a frequency. And once I understood that, the energy of love, like just one day, like I just fell in it. I was in this big, amazing place of calm. And like in that space, there's no judgment. There's no condemnation. There's compassion and peace and joy. And understanding, there's zero judgment. And when I found that place, because I had judged myself so long and that judgment fell away, I'm about to cry.
That's okay.
It's the most amazing feeling. And then when I found that, I can't even tell you how many days and weeks that I laid and I would wake up in the morning because I was before, I hated to wake up. I didn't want to get out of bed to the sun could wake me up. And I just felt the love from the sunlight on my bed. And I would lay there and like, I just want everyone to know this feeling. And it took me a while before I realized, oh my God, I'm the conduit. I'm the one that's meant to go help people find this place, because people don't even know it's there. I didn't know it existed. We have love around us at all times. But when you're that stuck in your mindset of abuse and unworthiness, you don't see it. You don't feel it. So, yeah.
That's amazing, actually. You almost made me cry.
Yes, that love does that. Yep.
Don't tell anybody.
I won't.
I'm a man that I cry. And I cry in the open, and not a lot of guys will do that. But, you know, even in my job, especially in my job, I saw so much negativity, so much negative emotion. Cops see the worst people, the worst situation. They see the best people at their worst. So when you combine that together, they see the worst in all, and it kind of compounds upon each other. So, you know, you kind of, those emotions get buried and they get pushed in and they get buried and they get pushed in. And, you know, after I retired, I started reflecting back on it, and I spent some days where I cried, and now I just cry. My kids go, well, Dad, you're just human.
Yep. It's so, okay to cry. It's good. Cleansing. There's actually some science thing I read about the difference in your tears between like happy tears and sad tears. There's actually difference in the tears, what's in the teardrop. So actually crying cleanses you. It's so necessary.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I read them.
I'm going to have to go look that up now.
I can't even remember where I read it, but I remember somebody, I don't even know if somebody sent it to me, and I was reading it going, oh my gosh, this is amazing. But it's different. Your tears are actually different.
Well, I can tell, obviously our listeners can't see you, but I can see you. You have a glow about you. You can see happiness coming off of you. You can see love coming off of you, and that's a positive thing, because you know, I never knew you before, but I can tell you, you look really, really happy now.
Thank you. Yeah, people say that.
Keep doing
love,
it.
It is. We are love. That energy, like it is, it sounds so crazy when you talk about it, but love is actually a frequency that you can stand in. And if you don't believe me, go to YouTube and look at video. Look, you can find music tuned to love frequency and healing frequency. It's the craziest thing. It worked great in my classroom. When it was quiz day, I played it in the background and they were calm.
Okay. What age kids do you teach?
Oh, I've taught so many. Well, I used to teach high school kids that were locked up. I actually went to the building they were in. I taught fourth grade 1 year. I taught seventh grade math 1 year. Like, I've kind of been, when
across
I first moved, it was, yeah, when I was the first a parent, it was in a K-5 school. So, yeah, I'm actually certified K-12. So,
yeah. A little bit of everybody. That's cool. Yeah. And thank you for sharing your time with those kids, as well as the kids that were in detention.
Oh,
not,
they were amazing kids.
But in juvenile detention.
Yeah, I think they needed me just as much as I learned from them. And they taught me grace and patience more than anything, because they didn't get it. They didn't get it anywhere. They didn't even know what it was. And to give that to them, there was days they would look at me like, you're actually going to help me? Blew their mind.
Well, I got to tell you, from a personal perspective and the stuff that I have done on my job and through my life and the things that I've seen, you doing that obviously is a very positive and uplifting thing, because you recognized it, you see it, you felt it, and then you spread that out to them. And that's a really good thing, because kids get forgotten, and unfortunately they get forgotten. And when they get forgotten, then they grow up or they don't grow up. And that's the negative side of it, of that. We won't really delve into that too much. We're going to keep this moving forward. So you say there's a love calling out to you. You just have to look deep inside yourself to find that. Is that where you start?
Yeah. And listening to your own thinking, because we have this innate intuition already inside of us, but we tend to ignore it, because sometimes our intuition sounds wonky. You're like, you want me to what? But once you start actually listening to it and tapping into it, it's directing us where we actually need to go. Like it's there. It's calling out to us, all nature. That bug in your house that's annoying the heck out of you, it's actually just loving you. trying to love you.
I will try to remember that the next time I have to throw a spider out the door.
I know. I try, and that's so funny because I used to smash them, and now I'm like trying to get them out the. Because like even my perception of like this is a life and it's beautiful, but I don't want you in here.
Scoot, scoot.
Get out. Yeah.
Do you think you would relate that energy to, and this might be a little off subject, but do you think you might relate that energy to qi? I practice qigong and I practice tai chi, which is pulling energy from around, pulling energy from the earth, pulling energy from my surroundings, from the earth, the sun, the trees, the moon, the rocks, everything. And you focus that energy. And when you focus that energy, it helps you to heal. It helps you to move forward. Could you compare it to that?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, the energy is all around us. Everyone, even the craziest thing, I think the weirdest spot I ever heard about energy was in my leadership class. It had nothing to do with anything but leadership, and it talked about when two people come together, your energy will actually, in essence, create a third energy. So if you have two negative people, which is, you know, you probably have heard about this with the cops, you know, when you have two really bad energy come together, they do some horrible crimes. It almost make that third energy. So as a leader, like if I come in with this negative energy, then whoever I'm leading is going to pick up that negative energy and make a third negative energy. So in essence, you know, what are you bringing forth? What kind of energy are you bringing? Be the higher, because like love and gratitude are your highest two frequencies. So if you pull, that'll pull people from fear. I guess maybe that's, which is kind of weird now, I just thought of that. Why, even though I was in that fear mode, people still came to me and I helped lift them up to that higher frequency to make you feel better. So yeah, it makes sense that, you know, you're pulling in sun, the moon, all of creation is from love. So yeah, in a roundabout way.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at that. We all have purpose, right?
Yes.
And we all have a reason for being here. Yeah. So how can we as individuals recognize that, or recognize something that would put us on that path to that purpose?
And for me, that I didn't recognize my purpose until I understood my worth. So the one thing that I have found when I've talked to other people about purpose is this is the question to ask yourself. If you think, oh, I'm meant to be a teacher. Say, like, for, I actually just had this conversation the other day. Like, I thought I was meant to be a teacher, spent all of this money and all this education. And yes, I did it for a while, but it wasn't really my calling. Because if I was to say to myself, if I can never teach kids again, how would that feel? But when I realized, you know, like I said, when I found that spot of love and wanting to help other people not carry that weight of unworthiness, and that horrible feeling of hate and sadness and anger. If I would tell myself I'm never going to help someone heal from that, feels like my soul's ripped out of my body. Like if you want to know if it's your purpose, tell yourself you can never do it. And if it feels like piece of you is ripped out, that's probably what you're meant to be doing. Cause like that whole thought that if I cannot do this, like my whole soul's crying out to help other people. That's when you'll know if it's your purpose. Because if you're kind of like, I can go either way, probably not your purpose.
A very, very good perspective. Very good perspective. Yeah, it's interesting when everybody wants to start it. People want to start up. When you're a kid, you say, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a fireman. I want to be a policeman. I want to be a teacher.
I want to be
an actress. Exactly. Sometimes life's journey on the way to that gives us those experiences in between that allows us to kind of grow from that. Would you agree?
Oh yeah. I feel like life is constantly trying to get you to go where you're supposed to go. Just again, are you listening to the signs? You know, we can shove all kinds of, that's one thing I also learned too. We can convince ourselves of all kinds of things. And I always picture the world as like this giant cosmic puzzle. And I'm really good at trying to take this puzzle piece and I'm just going to shove it right here because I think this is where I want it to go, even though it's not where it goes. So yeah, we got to be listening to ourselves.
You're a life coach, but you call yourself an empowerment coach.
Yeah. I didn't feel like life coach said enough because like And even some people ask me, like, you know, what do you do? And I'm like, well, I can help in any kind of area of life, but my passion is really just getting those people out of that darkness and into the light, away from the lies and into the truth. You are worthy. You are amazing. Your journey is beautiful. Every single piece of you is beauty and love. And because the whole idea of, I spent so much time in that dark hole of unworthiness that then everything around you is tainted by it. And I don't want people, like, the whole idea of one person having to go one more day like that, it hurts me. So, yeah.
I see that. So you decided to become an empowerment coach. Tell me a little bit about that. Help us understand what an empowerment coach does. I mean, you just gave me a small taste of it right there, but help us understand what you do.
It depends. Like, it's very client focused. It depends on what they're going through because everybody's journey is different. But I would say, though, that one of my gifts is feeling energy from other people. So sometimes I can direct them in a place they don't even realize that they need to go. Like, they might even say something and they don't even hear what they're saying. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Back up to what you just said. And then we start digging into, where did that thought come from? And I've done crazy stuff. Like, I've even done a journey back into a memory. Like, we've walked back to memories and literally was like, where are you at? Where's the person that said it to you? And she literally was, I'm like, what do you want to say to that person? If you could, you know, and she's like, basically was like, here's your words back. And she was like healed after that moment because we, like I said, we pick up on these other people's words that aren't ours. They're not ours to carry. So sometimes we'll go back to that moment and give the words back and be like, I don't need these. So it just depends on the person, what they're going through. And sometimes, like, they won't even know it, but I'll feel something. Like, I actually will sit before I get on, because most of it's a phone call. Before I even get on the phone, I will feel into their energy. And I can already tell if they're in, like, deep pain or sadness or something heavy's around them. And it's very eye-opening when I get them on the phone. And then I'm like, yeah, I can feel a lot of pain. And sometimes I share it with them and sometimes I don't, because some people are like, they call it woo-woo and they won't listen. They don't want to hear that kind of energy piece of it. And so then I kind of do it more from a life coach standpoint than a spiritual energy kind of feeling. So it's hard to put just like a specific spin because it's very client focused.
But that makes sense. Well, you're kind of an empath in regard to reading that energy, which is a really good thing, helping people move their lives forward from different perspectives, depending upon their circumstances, which mm-hmm. is also another good thing. Has this helped you to understand more about your relationship with your father?
Yeah, I have. I could go like way off track on that too. But as I've learned more about energy, his energy still exists. And therefore, I've actually visited his higher self, which sounds crazy. Some people are like, what? But yeah. But even before that, like, after, it was probably like a year, maybe after he passed away, he came to me in a dream and apologized and said he was so sorry and that he really loved me and he didn't understand what he was doing. And at that time, I never believed that was even possible. Somebody would have said someone that had passed away can come to me in a dream. I'm like, whatever. But, you know, until it happens to you and you're like, okay, well, maybe.
Well, as to my listeners now, if you haven't heard my earlier episodes, go back and listen to some of those. We talk about both of those things right there.
Yeah.
Being able to visit somebody in a higher place and getting messages in your dreams and how somebody can come to you and communicate that way. And in reality, if that helps you to heal and that makes you feel better and it helps your heart open up a little bit more, it's a positive thing. Mm-hmm. So even if you want to believe it, for the people out there, if you don't want to believe it outright and tell the person next to you that you believe it, you should really look deep inside yourself and kind of look and see if that message really was meant for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think. And again, not giving advice. This is just my experience.
Yeah. Just be open. There's a lot unknown. There's so much.
Yes.
And even our brain. I mean, what is that study about the brain? Like, we only use a certain percent of it. So what's the other percent for? There's so much we don't know.
Exactly. That's where the alien show comes in.
right?
I'm still looking for that one. I've got a little call out. I'd like to talk to some of you guys. Can you please come down? I have some questions, please.
Yep.
You wrote a book, right?
Yes, I did.
Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. It's called Second Chances, How I Turned Hate into Love and Found My Purpose. And it's basically my story, like bits of it, because it would take a lot because I've been through a lot. But it kind of glosses over some of the junk that I went through and my father passed away and just my journey. And I felt it was really important for people to understand that you can come from abuse and trauma and you can leave it behind. You can heal from it and move forward. Because I really wasn't going to write it. Like I kept hearing... write this, write this, write this. And my daughter would even come out and be like, are you writing your book? And I'm like, no. So other people's intuition, you know, always ask somebody else because sometimes people can confirm because she would be like, why aren't you writing your book? And so, yeah. So basically it's a lot about what I was talking about with you now, but more in depth.
Did the book come before Life Empowerment Coach or after?
No, it came after. And what's the funniest thing is like, as I was writing it and going back to some of my memories, I found a repressed memory that helps me heal even more. I didn't really go into it because I didn't share that one piece. I didn't share a lot with my family. But on the flip side, I will share just a tidbit of it. I learned because my grandma had passed away when I was really little and my mom was so distraught and my dad had brought her. She didn't even know I was there. And so for years, they couldn't figure out what was going on with me. But because I was so little, I didn't understand what happened. I was afraid to die or that I was actually killing people because we were going to a whole bunch of funerals back then. And somewhere in my head, I had got this idea that either I was going to die or I was killing someone. And then I just kind of pulled away and I wouldn't let anyone touch me. And I was got really, really picky about every little thing. So that was just another thing I went through. But for some reason, I couldn't remember leaving the kitchen. I was just stuck in that kitchen. So we actually can leave energy in different memories. So there was like a huge chunk of my childhood stuck in that kitchen way back when.
And you resolved it with yeah. writing your book. So that and yeah. your empowerment.
Yep. So it's kind of weird. Awesome. Yeah. So sometimes we got to go back to move forward. Not always, but sometimes.
Go back in time.
Yeah.
What advice can you give someone going through what you have gone through?
You can do this. You can get to the other side. There's nothing immensely special about me that makes me the only one in the world who can do this. Everyone can. Like I said, love is there. It's just a matter of flipping it's almost like turning a light on, like a switch of because our perceptions change every single day. If you can just, you know, even just one step every day after a year, that's 365 steps that you've now changed since there. We're constantly growing and changing to pay attention to what you're thinking about. It might not be right.
That's great advice, I think. How can someone learn more about you, about your book and how to get it?
It's on Amazon. It's on a bunch of different things. If you want the actual book in your hand, Amazon. Otherwise, I think like Barnes & Noble, like the ebooks on Barnes & Noble, and I can't remember, but definitely Amazon.
I'll do some research for you, and I will put some links into the show notes. How's that?
Perfect.
That should help out immensely. So for your life empowerment coaching, how can they get and connect with you with that?
I have a website. It's soullovelegacy.com. And I'm also on Facebook. Business page is still Soul Love Legacy. Everything I have is Soul Love Legacy. So
it's a good brand. I will put links to all of those things on my show notes and on my website beforeyougopodcast.com so that people can get in touch with you and learn more about how they can get your services and your book.
Thank you.
Any last words of wisdom?
I'm just going to reiterate with don't let someone else's words become your truth.
That
you
works.
Decide who you are. You decide.
I like that.
Yeah.
Lori, thank you very much for sharing your journey and for spending your time with me today. I really appreciate the conversation. You've opened my eyes on some things, and I appreciate what you've done to make other people's lives positive.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Thanks for listening to this episode of One More Thing Before You Go, a unique conversation about life. If you like our show and want to know more, check out our website at beforeyougopodcast.com. That's beforeyougopodcast.com. Tell your story, share your expertise, contribute to the blog, and subscribe to the newsletter. You can find us as well as subscribe to the program and rate us on your favorite podcast listening platform.
And one more thing before you go, have a nice day, have a nice week, and thanks for listening.
One More Thing Before You Go, a unique conversation about life podcast, is a creation of One More Thing Productions, established 2010, all rights reserved.